So welcome, everyone, for our Parsha of the Week class, The Laughter of Sodom. Sodom. The Laughter of Sodom. So obviously, if we're going to have a class on laughter, and we know how famous Jewish comedians of yesteryear have been, I would probably be remiss not to share a story or something. I'm not going to share the Harvey Rappaport story, right? Neil, you've heard that at least a couple of times. So I'm not going to go there. But I will share a joke, which I think is kind of cute. And hopefully you will enjoy. It'll be very light, very light. Okay? I used to have, when I was in fourth grade Rebbe and a sixth grade Rebbe, I had an official joke chair. And so one day I was telling the kids a joke and I wasn't seated in the joke chair. I mean, it was a metaphor. And one of the little girls put up her hand and said, "Rabbi, but you can't tell a joke." I said, "What's the matter?" She said, "You're not sitting in your official chair." So I said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I said, "Khatasi," you know, so I sat down in the chair. And then at the end of the year, ready for this, they produced a book as a gift for me. I have it somewhere in my collection of the best of Rabbi Kaplan. My Torah didn't make it into the book, but the jokes made it into the book, which I thought, yeah, but you know what, Friday night, a lot of parents would come to me and say, "You know, Rabbi, I don't know if my little Devorah remembered your Torah talk, but that was a great joke from this week." I said, "Okay." I said, "Look, we aim to please, you know. If I can't get you with my Torah, I'll get you with the laughter of the Torah." Okay. So did I ever share with you the story of the out-of-work actor? Out-of-work actor? So Goldfarb is an out-of-work actor living in Los Angeles, and he gets a phone call from his agent. And he says, "Goldfarb, I have some good news. A gig." Goldfarb's been out of business for a while. He says, "Yeah, I'm great. I'm in." He says, "What do I do?" It's a little non-traditional. He says, "Show up at the LA Zoo, report directly to the head zookeeper, and he will give you the rest of the story." Goldfarb says, "The LA Zoo, what are they having, a theatrical performance?" He says, "Yeah, but you'll find out. I promise you." He says, "Well, what does it pay?" He says, "It starts off at $2,000 a day, and it could perhaps be bigger." So Goldfarb is intrigued. He says, "Give me the information." He shows up a couple hours later, and he has his interview with the zookeeper. The zookeeper explains, "Mr. Goldfarb," he says, "we are in a pickle. We're in a dilemma. Henry, the only mountain gorilla in captivity in the entirety of the world, was struck with heat illness. And he's in the hospital. He'll make it. But he's on the designated, you know, the DL list for about at least a month or two. And we pre-sold $3.5 million worth of tickets to all the school districts in Southern California. We need Henry. We don't want a refund. Could you be Henry?" Goldfarb says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, you're an actor." He says, "Yeah." He says, "We have the people who made Michael Crichton's movie Congo at our disposal, all the suits, all the technology. We could outfit you and you will become Henry." He says, "Yeah?" He says, "Let me show you." So I take him down to the outfitting room, and there's a couple of Hollywood bigwigs and costumes, and they outfit Goldfarb, put on the costume, and he looks at himself in the mirror, and he's Henry the gorilla. And he starts to visualize, you know, the gait of a gorilla, the bent posture, and he starts to play with it a little bit. And the zookeeper applauds. He says, "Mr. Goldfarb, you are as good, if not better, than the real Henry. You want the job?" Goldfarb says, is it $2,000 a day?" He says, "We'll make it $3,000. I'm in." He says, "When do you want me to start?" He says, "Oh, like 5 minutes ago. The kids are waiting." So he goes into the gorilla pit. He makes his entrance. 5,000 little children are there, seated, waiting, and they applaud. They go crazy. And, of course, Henry is much more user crowd friendly than the real Henry. He starts throwing banana peels at the crowd. They love him. The end of the day, the zookeeper comes over and says, "Goldfarb, you were a home run." He says, $5,000 a day starting tomorrow morning. Come back. Don't be late. And it goes on for a few days. It goes on for a week. And then something new comes to town, a new exhibit. And he notices that his crowds are diminishing. And adjacent to him, there's a lion pit where Leo, the man-eating lion, the oldest African lion in captivity, has been brought over. And now the people, you know, it's the new thing in town. So they're starting to go to Leo. And he thinks to himself, I may lose my gig. So he realizes, I got to start be more proactive. So as the crowds are with Leo, Henry gets up on the grate and the divide between the gorilla and lion pits, and he starts taunting and teasing Leo, throwing banana peels. The lion goes bananas, I guess. He goes berserk, trying to get at the stupid human, who obviously can smell that it's not a gorilla. And the crowd eats it up. Zookeeper is over the moon. And then on the third day, fate intervenes. He slips, does Henry Goldfarb, on his own banana peel. He does a header right off of the middle divide into the lion pit. The lion's awaiting to get his revenge. Goldfarb forgets himself. He stands up erect, and he's no longer Henry. He's Goldfarb, and he's about to die. And so he starts yelling, help, help, help! And Leo pounces up on him. He can smell the fetid breath, the fetid breath of the lion. And the last thing he remembers, he yells out, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And Leo the lion responses, and instantly says, Baruch Shem Kevod Baruchusel Le'olam Ba'ed. And then a baboon next door guys, he says, guys, shut up, you're going to get everybody fired.
Okay.
That was worth the wait, right? All right, so we have to laugh. Now we have to, that was the end of the class. Thank you for coming, and we'll proceed from there. Abe, welcome. I can see that you're on. Good to have you. And Phil. So we're starting our class tonight, the laughter of Sodom. So let's talk about laughter for a moment, okay? Shall we? So first of all, what is the source of laughter, of humor? Think about it for a moment. But our question tonight is a bigger question than that. The Avot, the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, each are given a defining quality. That is who they are. Abraham is Mr. Chesed, kindness. Jacob, Yaakov, the third, is Emet, Mr. Truth. And then the one in the middle, Isaac, Yitzchak, whose name, by the way, means he shall laugh. That's a literal translation of Isaac's name. Mr. Laughter is also synonymous with gvura, power, or din, justice. Justice. Very strange. Laughter, and the guy named Mr. Laughter is a decidedly, and again, I'm sure Yitzhak Avinu is not going to condemn me for saying this, but Isaac is like the most unfunny of the patriarchs and matriarchs. We don't know anywhere that he has a sense of humor. So it's strange, right? It's like he's the least likely of the patriarchs, matriarchs, and figures of the Torah, of the Bible, to maybe be up there with, you know, Rodney Dangerfield and Henny Youngman at the Homowak. It's probably not going to happen, right? So is there a real, and there must be a relationship. So I'm framing the question up front. Isaac, laughter. Din, judgment. How are they interrelated? They must be. Now, what I'm going to show you is kind of shocking. Everywhere around Isaac and around the Parsha, Vayera, that is the Parsha of Isaac's coming into this world, everything has to do with laughter. And not always in the context of Isaac necessarily, but everywhere else in the Parsha, everyone seems to be laughing in different ways. Subtle differences about the laughter, the cause and effect, yes, but it's so outlandish. As we're going to go through it very briefly right here from our source sheet, everyone's laughing. Strange. Laughter, and then you have a Parsha Vayera, which is not about laughter. Can you guess what it's about? Justice. It's all about, because remember Abraham says, I'll just cite this one source. Abraham says to God, oh, so you're going to wipe out Sodom, Gomorrah, and the five cities. 50 righteous people, you're still going to kill everybody? That wouldn't be justice. You, Hashem, are Mr. Justice. You are the Shofet, the ultimate truthful judge. You can't, if you find 10 righteous people in each city, will you spare the city? God says yes. And they slowly, you know, haggle down to if you can find 10 righteous people in Sodom alone, would you spare the city? And God says, of course, yes. Now, tragically, they couldn't find 10. But it's all about justice. And if God is not just, what does that mean? Strange, right? So let's go through the different laughter moments. And remember, the Torah is not coincidental. If it embeds the idea of laughter, Yitzchak, Sechok, laughing, there must be a reason. It must be telling us something that we need to come to some terms with. Okay, so let's begin. So number one, the first time Abraham is told by God that he, as a very old man, is going to have a child with Sarah. Remember, the only child he has at this point is Ishmael through Hagar. So he's told by God at the end of Lech Lecha, the previous Parsha, he's going to have a child. So it says, Abraham fell on his face and he laughed. He said to himself, will a child be born to one who is 100 years old, and will Sarah, who is 90 years old, give birth? So let's examine that type of laughter. What is the laughter? I would say that laughter is the craziness of existence itself. It's a laughter at the concept of an old man and an old woman having a child together. So it's like the outlandish nature of a miracle. And Abraham laughs with joy, correct? Okay. How about number two? Sarah then gets the news at the beginning of Vayera from one of the angels. Remember, the three angels at the beginning of Vayera come to visit Abraham because he's sick, and they announce the pending birth of Sarah, Abraham, to Isaac. And then two of the angels go on, one to rescue Lot from Sodom and the other to destroy Sodom, right? So when Sarah hears about the fact that she is a 90-year-old woman is going to give birth, it says in number two, and Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I have become worn out, the rabbis say she literally didn't have a womb, will I have smooth flesh? And also my master is old. Now, apparently, in the eyes of God, that laughter wasn't so kosher. Because look at source 3. Hashem, the Lord, said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, is it really true that I will give birth, although I am old? Now, why is it okay for Abraham to laugh, but it wasn't okay for Sarah? So again, without going into detail here, because it's not really the class, Abraham just laughed, not at anybody, but just at the concept, the joy of the outlandishness, if you will, of someone giving birth at that age. Whereas, if you see with Sarah, with number two, it was personal. My master's old, and I'm going to have a child? So it's very personal. It's not like a general laughing with joy at the outlandish nature of a nace, of a miracle. No, it's very personal. So Sarah, God's not so happy. And then Sarah, of course, denies it. Look at source 4. And Sarah denied having said that she laughed. I did not laugh because she was afraid. And he, God, said, no, but you laughed. See, it's back and forth, okay? Now, what's outrageous is when you finally get to Sodom, that's why it's called the laughter of Sodom, you even have people laughing in Sodom. Now, it's at the very end of Sodom's existence, yes, but listen to the context. So the angels identify themselves to Lot. They say, we're here and we cannot destroy Sodom until you are at a safe distance and safe because of Abraham. We're here to save you. Who else do you have in the home? Anyone who is your family? Go talk to them now and tell them we have about 5 minutes. And of course, Lot famously pulls, I can't resist, a little bit of a Jack Benny. Or was it Henny Youngman? Who famously said, your money, your life, and he says, I'm thinking. Might have been Jack Benny, I'm not sure. Could have been Henny Youngman, one of the two Jewish comedians. So that's kind of what he does, right? Because he doesn't want to leave. There is a weird trope. Dr. Frank will appreciate this. It's called a shalshelet, where it goes up three times like a pazer, and there's only four of them to be found in the whole Torah. And the rabbis perhaps are teaching us that it's sort of like, do I leave my money? But I can't spend it if I'm dead. So it's literally going through Lot's mind. Should I leave or should I not leave? Because he had millions of dollars that he couldn't take with him. So it's your money or your life. And he's, I'm thinking. So the shalshelet actually gives like a chain. That's what the word shalshelet means. That he's sort of prevaricating. He's going back and forth and he's torn. Should I or should I not leave? So finally, Lot, in source number 5. So Lot went forth And he spoke to his sons-in-law, the suitors of his daughters. And he said to them, arise, go forth from this place, for the Lord is destroying the city. But he seemed like he was a comedian, that he had laughed in the eyes of his sons-in-law. It's a big fat joke. Okay, let's talk about that laughter. So what does that laughter mean? I would say that that laughter is based on what? On the idea that it's not possible, there isn't a God, we reject the concept of justice in this world, and it's not possible that we could be held accountable for our crimes against humanity, which there were many. Okay, let's go back into source 6. So now Isaac comes into the world, and Abraham named his son who had been born to him, whom Sarah had born to him, Isaac, which means he shall laugh. So again, now we come to the centerpiece, he shall laugh. And Isaac, again, is Mr. Justice. And Sarah said, this is number 7, God has made laughter for me. Whoever hears about, meaning the magic of this miracle birth, will laugh with joy over me. Yitzchak li. So this is the definitive name of Isaac. Because people will share the incongruity and unbelievable nature of the miracle that a 100-year-old man and a 9-year-old woman could have a child together. It's impossible. So whoever laughs with joy, not mocking, not cynicism, but with sharing simcha, sharing my joy, this type of person is the reason I'm calling my son Isaac. Strange, right? Because again, Isaac is Mr. Justice. I can think of a lot of names. In fact, there's a name, a very common name that we use in the Torah, that is a name of a boy, which maybe would be in a more appropriate name for Isaac. Dan. Daniel. Daniel. Din, Dan, means justice. Maybe that would be a very appropriate name for Isaac since he's Mr. Justice. But no, we have to somehow talk about laughter with Isaac. Very strange. So again, just to reiterate the question that we're holding it in abeyance, what is the relationship between laughter and justice? Maybe they are interrelated. And then finally, number 8. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, referring now to Ishmael, whom she had born to Abraham, and he was mitzki mitzachek. He was laughing at Isaac, and he had a little game. Here's the game that Ishmael liked to play, because he's the big brother. He would maybe put an apple on the head of Isaac and, you know, casually shoot some arrows to knock the apple off the head. Sarah, of course, was decidedly unimpressed because she realized this is a clear and present danger and a sign, an omen. This guy's bad news. He can't be here. He's a clear and present danger to Isaac. So that's at the point where she forces Abraham's hand and says, you got to drive the boy away. Mom and boy have got to leave because it's a danger to our Isaac. He won't survive. So again, it's all about laughter. But you see how laughter is used here euphemistically every time? Did you see that? In other words, all the different times that we've had laughter, and they all surround the saga of Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac, they're all used euphemistically. In fact, in the next parsha, without going into detail, the word sechok, laughter, is used again with Isaac. Do you know how it's used? For a man knowing his wife. Instead of saying Yodea, he knew her, talks about Abimelech sees that Isaac and Rebekah are laughing together, which is a metaphor for conjugal relations. So it's used like in every possible way. But what does that mean for us? In other words, laughter, but we all see, right? That time and time again, embedded in our story of Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac, and in the citizens of Sodom, and all that is interrelated, there seems to be laughter. So let's talk about laughter for a moment, okay? Let's just back up. So you walk into a room, and there's a lady sitting there, and she is laughing. And she's laughing so hard that she has tears streaming down her face. Let's say you walk in right after she's finished laughing, and you see her with the tears and the expression. So there are two possibilities, because you don't have context, right? Possibility one, she just heard the Goldfarb the gorilla lion joke, and she thinks it's great. The other is she just found out her child was murdered by an Arab terrorist, was stabbed, like what happened to those poor three people last week, and she just got the news that her child's dead, and she's crying. You would have no way of knowing, neither would I, without the context. I'm sure you've experienced this. You can laugh to the point where you cry. So tears can intermingle with laughter, correct? So in other words, it's the context that supplies whether the laughter or the tears that you are seeing are because it's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Oh, by the way, this is our annual Thanksgiving ritual in my home that we always have to watch John Candy and Steve Martin every year, the best Thanksgiving movie of all time, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You're going the wrong way. If you haven't seen it, by the way, highly recommend it. Okay, you'll thank me after Thanksgiving. So you can't tell if the poor woman has experienced a great joke or extreme grief. It's impossible, right? And we've all had that experience where you laugh so hard you're hurting. You have like a gut laugh, a belly laugh, right? And so there seems to be, do you see, even in the way we laugh in life, there seems to be this intermingling, this almost like a dichotomy, where laughter can be sourced in humor or perhaps in grief. Now, just to throw something out at you, when I was a young boy, the rage was Polish jokes. Remember? Everyone here is old enough to remember Polish jokes. And, you know, I didn't really think that Polish people were dumb, right? So I remember asking my mom and dad, like, what's with the Polish jokes? Like, in Canada, we have our own little jokes. They're called Newfie jokes. I'm a person from Newfoundland, you know, that they're supposed to be a little slow. So it was more of a politically correct way, because I don't think people from Newfoundland are dumb. They're fine Canadians. But we kind of subbed out, when it got politically incorrect, the Polish joke for the Newfie joke, right? So many of you who visited Canada may have heard of a good Newfie joke, right? I remember once telling somebody in Toronto, I said, you know, I have a phenomenal Newfie joke. He looks at me and says, Rabbi, I resent this. I was born in Gander, Newfoundland. I said, it's okay, I'll tell it to you nice and slow then. That's one of my favorites. So Polish jokes, I was told by mom and dad, and you know this to be true, you know the history, that what the Poles did, the complicity that they are responsible for and really have never fessed up to their participation in the Holocaust. You know, you read books and you know from your history that without the aid and sympathy and joy and gleefulness that the Poles and Lithuanians and the Ukrainians melded with the Nazis, yes, we would have died, but it wouldn't have been 6 million that would have died. That's without question. So I was told that it was sort of an after-the-fact way of Jewish comedians wrote these Polish jokes like as a shtoch, if you know Yiddish. You know, a shtoch is sort of like a needle to shtoch the Polish people for their participation in the Holocaust. So some of you can go, yes, you may have heard that yourselves, okay? So again, you have this most horrific tragedy, at least in Jewish history, maybe in world history, and then you have the laughter that somehow is integral part of the relationship of the tragedy of the Holocaust. I mean, it's not a coincidence that every single death camp, except for Mauthausen, was located in Poland, right? The Germans didn't want them in Germany. They're all there. I promise you, they're all in Poland, okay? Except for Mauthausen, I believe, which is in Germany. I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. So, again, you see this sort of intermingling, right, of laughter and grief and horror and laughter. How do we understand this? Okay. So let's back up. We spoke about the context of how something can be defined only when you are privy to the storyline behind the grief, the tears. Are they tears of joy? Are they tears of laughter? Or are they tears of sorrow and loss? We don't know. But what about justice? They have to fit together, right? In other words, it's not that Abraham was a really great guy and did a lot of kindness. No. the kindness gene defined Abraham, right? It's not that Jacob told a lot of truths. Therefore, we say, oh, he's a great guy. He's like Abe Lincoln? George Washington, right? Never told a lie. No. The truth defined the essence of who Jacob was, which is another class we're going to have. How do we reconcile some of Jacob's actions vis-a-vis his brother Esau with a truthful individual if it's so synonymous with who he is? So again, Isaac is din, is justice, gevurah, and yet his name is all about laughter? And we just proved that disproportionately, if you would do the arithmetic, how many times does the word laughter appear in Genesis? Or even in the five books of Moses? Majority of them are right here in this section. How could that be? What does that mean? They're meant to be compared and contrasted, correct? So what do we make out of it? So let me ask you a question. What if you lived in Sodom? God forbid. And your job was stand-up comic. You get up, okay, and you try to be funny. Now, I dare say that your humor would be a little flat. Because what is humor? You ever try to explain a joke to somebody? Right? It's nigh but impossible. Why isn't it possible to explain humor? Right? Just try this, right? Try telling a really sophisticated joke to somebody who just doesn't have the context or the background. Even if they finally understand like the concept, it's lost its joy. It's lost its fun, right?
It had to be there.
Exactly. So why is that? So I would offer the following. What was absent in Sodom? Justice. There was no justice. They would literally take a woman, a young lady, this was the nail in the coffin, who had the temerity to offer hachnasas orchim, kindness, to a stranger, just as a nice gesture. It was a capital crime in Sodom. They took her, and they infamously covered her head to toe in honey, and they put her out for the wasps and the bees to kill her. And when that moment happened, they say that tsa'aka, the cries of that poor young lady, reach the heavenly throne. And at that point, God said, okay, it's time to see what's going on here. We need to mete out justice. So there's an absence of justice in Sodom. I would dare say to you that if you tried to be a stand-up comic in either Sodom, Gomorrah, there's actually three more cities, Admah, Tzfoyim, and Soar. There's five, they're called the five Kikar HaYarden. They're the five cities of the plains, the very lush area around the Dead Sea. Interesting, it's called the Dead Sea now. Well, okay. Be that as it may, I dare say that you would not be a successful comedian. You know why? Because isn't comedy sourced with a departure from the expectation of what it should be? In other words, gorillas don't talk. A gorilla is not going to say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And a lion is not going to answer, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto L'Olam Va'ed. And you surely didn't expect the baboon next door to also be a human. And as somebody said after they heard the joke, is there any animals in this zoo? Right? Well, not in the story. But suppose for a moment, this was the norm. That zoos were populated by great actors, because it is Hollywood, LA Zoo, right? Maybe it's possible. So what if you told that joke from the standpoint where somebody just looked at you, and if you ever told a really good joke to somebody and they just look at you with no smile, it doesn't feel good, right? I don't see the humor there, Rabbi. Why is that funny? Maybe it's true. It could be. Maybe gorillas, lions, and baboons talk, and maybe they say Shema Yisrael. Maybe in L.A. they have a Hollywood zoo. Maybe it's possible. So what is justice? You ever thought about it? Justice is taking the departure from a baseline of expectation that has been skewered and bringing the baseline back into order. Think about it. When criminals skewer the baseline of societal norms, justice forces, it mandates that we must bring it back. Constant. So justice is always constantly fighting to bring the departure from the norm, in this case, chicanery, thievery, criminality, and to bring it back. It can't tolerate, justice cannot tolerate that departure. So if you live in Sodom, where everything's okay, and you make a joke about, you know, marrying your cow. So in Sodom, you could marry your cow. I mean, legally, I'm just guessing, right? So somebody in Sodom will look at you and they say, well, I don't think that's funny. It could be. Well, where's the humor there? Well, we're not against that. That's okay. Oh. Right? Can you imagine a poor comedian is going through his list and he's starting to redact himself? Well, I can't tell that one now because obviously maybe birds could fly, you know, whatever in that case. Or could be that, right? So in other words, in the absence of justice, there is no laughter. Laughter emanates from the expected to the unexpected, right? That's the kick. The kick is that the gorilla shouldn't be saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That is a departure from justice. But if it was possible, then a person would not laugh. They'd say, well, there's no humor there. So I would say, au contraire, that not only is Isaac, he will laugh, but he's perfectly named because his attribute of justice, of power, of din, produces laughter. It's only when you have a baseline of normalcy, of expected behavior, that's humor. When you go away from the humor, it's silly. And obviously, there can be subtle forms of humor, delicious forms of humor. You know what the most delicious form of humor is? It's even named after Isaac. You know what it's called? It's called poetic justice. The slyest form of humor that will bring a little wry smile to all our faces, right? Like I had a little bit of justice today watching, you know, my UK, my British soccer team annihilate the Iranians. And they didn't, by the way, the Iranians, give them credit, did not sing their national anthem. I'm hoping that when they go back to Tehran after the World Cup, they will have a home to go back to, okay? But when you lose 6-2 in soccer, like my wife said, I'm not really sure what that means. I said, 6 goals in soccer is 200 points in a basketball game. I said, that's pretty embarrassing. So I thanked the British, you know, for their help in at least bringing a little something there, a little justice to our world, right? So again, if there's a poetic justice where you try to, you know, put the banana peel in front of the blind guy and you forget about your own banana peel and you yourself slip, ah, there's that little wry smile. So the most subtle, sophisticated form of laughter comes from justice. Isn't it amazing? So I would dare say that the laughter of Sodom is the impossibility. And why are the sons-in-law of Lot laughing at him? What do you mean God is going to judge us? What are you talking about? God? Justice here? What? So they're laughing at the incredulity of the impossibility that there could ever be justice in this world, right? That's where their laughter emanates from. But if you laugh with that type of harshness, that's a different type of laughter. But what if a person laughs the way Sarah laughs when she says, listen to these lines, gorgeous. She says, I'm going to name him Isaac. You know why? Because he's brought laughter into my life. Listen to her words. I'll say them in Hebrew. Tzichok asali Elokim. God has made joy, has made laughter for me. Kol ha-shomea yitzachak li. Anyone who laughs, anyone who celebrates the magical birth to a 190-year-old man and woman of a boy, they will laugh. The world will laugh. Do you want to hear something amazing? And this is the final thing I'll share with you. So not only have we found out that there isn't a contradiction between Isaac's name, laughter, because din, justice, is the baseline that creates all laughter. Humor and comedy is from a baseline, which is justice. But when Sarah says those words, listen to how beautiful they are. Rashi, Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki, the great Torah commentator, says the following. He says, when Sarah says those words, this is what she was really saying. News will spread all throughout the Middle East of the magical birth of my son Isaac. And some will respond cynically. Because people are cynical. Tragically. Nebuch. But, if a person hears and opens their hearts and their minds to what it means to wait a lifetime for a blessing, a lifetime of loss, where I'm this old 90-year-old woman without any potentiality. I have no womb. I can't carry a baby until God ordains, and miraculously I have a baby. Whoever hears about Isaac being born to me and to my husband Abraham, and whoever laughs at life itself and the miracle of life, you know what Rashi says happened to that person? They got their own miracle. And on the day that the news spread all around the Middle East, hundreds and hundreds of blessings were opened up to people. If a person was ill and they laughed with Sarah and Abraham over Isaac's birth, they were healed that day. If they were barren themselves, they became pregnant that day. Hundreds and hundreds of people received blessings. So my hope and my prayer for us, for our world, is that we should share the nachas, the joy of others. We've had so much pain in our community here, locally, in our country, and in our world. We are desperate, desperate, I know I am, to laugh. And if we will share the simchas, the joy of others, God promises us, my gosh, if you can celebrate with an Abraham and Sarah magical birth, you deserve your own magic in your life. And we should all be on the receiving end of that magic. I wish everyone a wonderful evening.